Hello, this is Stephanie with the Herald and Review for Tuesday, June 12th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, In the Nick of Time, Rain Provides Relief for Farmers, More Possible This Week. After days of continuously hot and humid weather in central Illinois, some local farmers and weather experts said Monday that the area's recent rainfall has provided a refuge from dry conditions. It's been a very good thing, said Corey Ritter, who operates a farm on about 2,000 acres of land in Blue Mound. If you would have talked to me 48 hours ago, I would have been extremely nervous of crop conditions and soil moisture. The National Weather Service in Lincoln said that Macon County was hit with about 1 to 2 inches of rain on Monday, while areas within the southern regions of central Illinois saw much higher totals. Ritter said the soil at his farm has soaked the rain up beautifully and has allowed his crop's lush green color to return. He said his farm has recently gone through patterns of missing rain to not receiving enough. Hot days have caused the corn curl up to protect itself. Corn to curl up to protect itself, Ritter said, which takes away from its yield potential daily. We've had so many rain chances that have failed. You try not to get your hopes up, Ritter said. I was happy with the half inch that we received Saturday. That was pretty nice. Jim Angel, Illinois State climatologist, and Macon County Farm Bureau Executive Director Tim Stock also agreed that the area's recent wet conditions have been positive for some farmers in areas that have been dry in recent weeks. Looks like the rain came at the nick of time, Angel said. It's hard to tell what is considered a normal summer growing season for farm communities anymore, Stock said, due to unpredictable weather patterns in the Midwest. This season, the shortened spring allowed farmers to plant crops in a timely manner and led to a lot of corn growing at a more rapid pace than normal, he said. Each year is different due to the obstacles that farmers face, Stock said. They're really huffing to put a crop in. I don't know how many guys holding off because of weather. In average years, Angel said, 4.5 inches of rain would be enough to provide a good corn crop. However, receiving half of that would lead to an over-reliance on moisture that has been stored in soil, he said. That could be a problem as you go through the growing season, Angel said. Some people can coast a little while because their soils are so good, but we really do need the rain. Outside of Macon County, the Weather Service estimated that counties such as Christian and Shelby saw between 3 to 5 inches of rain Monday. Meteorologist Chris Miller said that many areas in Christian County were flooded due to the heavy rain. Coles County also dealt with some street flooding after a deluge of rainfall hit the area Sunday. Cameron Craig, a climatologist with the Eastern Illinois University Weather Center, said street flooding and similar conditions can result from how fast it falls rather than the actual amount of rain. Decatur Police Sergeant Sean Gunther said a lot of the underpasses in the city, such as ones on North Jasper Street and East Grand Avenue, flooded due to heavy rain in the area. Intense rain Monday afternoon even flooded the North Main Street underpass, just south of East Green Street near downtown Decatur. A car was stalled at the underpass and traffic was being diverted onto East Green Street. Soon after the rain passed, the water began to recede and one lane was reopened. Gunther said all lanes at the underpass were reopened by 8:05 p.m. The 2008 Chevy Malibu was being driven by 18-year-old Shaylin Force, who said she was delivering pizza for Papa John's when she encountered water pooled beneath the underpass. Other people were driving through it, so I'm like, sure, I can go through it too. But no, said Force, whose uniform pants were mostly soaked as she sat on the curb waiting for a tow truck. Force said she made it up the hill on the other side of the underpass, but her car began to slide backward, and then water started to seep inside. She called 911 and abandoned the pizzas in the car as she sought safety, with the water up to her kneecaps as she exited the vehicle. She said she had already called her manager and the customers to let them know the order was delayed and that her car likely wouldn't be running anytime soon. For drivers who encounter standing water, Force has a simple piece of advice. Turn around. Don't even go through it at all, she said. Just because other people do it doesn't mean you're going to make it too. Gunther said that flooding is inevitable when the rain pours down hard. When you get those torrential downpours, I don't know any sewer system that doesn't back up, he said. Miller said central Illinois could see more showers and thunderstorms as the week continues, as a front coming in from the west is expected to approach the area. The showers are expected to be hit or miss, he said, as the front pushes through the area rather than linger. Most areas won't get any rain, but a few areas might get a thunderstorm, Miller said, That's pretty common for the summertime. Our next story, also from the front page, is headlined State Seeks More Eagle Creek Bids, One Proposal Received for Lake Shelbyville Resort. The state is asking for ideas for the closed, decaying Eagle Creek Resort along Lake Shelbyville after its request for proposals to 3 months ago received only one answer. Illinois Department of Natural Resources spokesperson Ed Cross said Monday the state was still hoping to find a private developer for the facility in Eagle Creek State Park. He said the department uses a scoring system to determine whether a development plan is viable. The one proposal received last time from Sullivan Marina on Lake Shelbyville didn't meet the needed score. The marina operator did not respond to a message Monday afternoon. The proposal failed to meet the minimum score in 4 out of 6 areas, Cross said, but the developers were very accepting of IDNR suggestions, and we hope they'll try again. The 138-room Eagle Creek Resort, built in 1989, went through a variety of operators with state contracts before being closed in 2009 due to severe mold problems. Since then, one developer abandoned a plan to revamp the facility, and another request for proposals in 2017 drew no interest. A marquee golf course remains open, along with campgrounds and other park facilities. The Eagle Creek complex is leased by IDNR from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, managers of Lake Shelbyville. Shelbyville Mayor Jeff Johnson said any movement forward on Eagle Creek would be welcomed by the Lake Shelbyville area. "We've been waiting a long time for some forward motion on Eagle Creek," he said. "The sooner the property is viable and able to serve visitors, the better it is for the entire area." State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, has previously urged developers to look at a new, smaller footprint for the resort that would cost less than the as much as $17 million it could take to restore the existing facilities. He has also chided IDNR for not leasing the property to experienced resort owners. In the past, IDNR had lessees who had no experience with hospitality. "That must change," he said. "Nobody has any interest in handing this off to anyone who doesn't know what they're doing and don't have the resources to do it." Moving now to the local and state section, we'll go to an article headlined "Fairgrounds, Capital Among Projects. State Budget Provides Funding for Upgrading Facilities in Springfield." Repairing buildings at the state fairgrounds, replacing some plumbing in the Capitol, and making long-awaited improvements to the Lincoln Herndon Law Office are among the public works projects that will be financed under the budget signed into law recently. The things moving to the head of the line in this budget would be road projects, also several hundred million dollars for improvements and repairs at facilities like colleges, universities, prisons, the Capitol complex, said State Rep. Greg Harris, Democrat of Chicago, the House Democrats' point person on the budget. "The deferred maintenance kind of repairs that have built up over the last couple of years, so there can be some catch-up." That includes a $30 million appropriation for upgrading the plumbing in the Capitol. This is a proactive measure designed to repair and eliminate old piping and eliminate dead leg piping, said Henry Haupt, spokesman for Secretary of State Jesse White. The office is responsible for upkeep of the Capitol. Haupt said a dead leg pipe, which extends a short distance and then is capped, allows water to stagnate. "That is a breeding ground for bacteria," he said. Another $35 million is going to be spent to upgrade the high voltage system in the Capitol complex. The current system was installed in the early 1980s. Upgrading the system will greatly improve energy efficiency and will improve the quality of electricity to the Capitol complex, Haupt said. In addition, this proactive effort will better ensure the electrical system does not fail, similar to what happened at the Illinois State Fairgrounds. Haupt said the projects won't get underway until next year. The budget also appropriates $20 million for design work to complete the renovations and upgrades on the Capitol. The state has been gradually giving the Capitol a major upgrade, replacing antiquated mechanical systems and reconfiguring space inside the building to restore it to its late 19th, early 20th century appearance. The budget also contains $30 million to make badly needed repairs to buildings at the fairgrounds. Perhaps the highest profile of them is the Coliseum, which was shut down last year out of safety concerns. It has been closed ever since. The most recent estimate to repair the building is about $7.7 million, said Department of Agriculture spokeswoman Rebecca Clark. Several historic sites will get money for improvements under the budget. That includes more than $1 million to finish work on the Lincoln Herndon Law Office and restoration of the Tinsley Dry Goods Store. Our next story is headlined, Police. Man starts fire, menaces firefighter. Police said a Decatur man tried to kill himself by setting his trailer home on fire and then threatened to assault one of the firemen who was trying to put the blaze out. A sworn police affidavit said the 24-year-old man, who was accused of setting the fire in an office of the trailer in the 2000 block of Hedrick Court on Saturday night, also told police he knew his mother was present in the structure at the time. He admitted to starting the fire in an attempt to kill himself after arguing with his boyfriend over the phone, Decatur police officer Timothy Wisniewski said in the affidavit. The man was booked on preliminary charges of aggravated arson involving an occupied residence and aggravated assault on a fireman, which was subject to review by the Macon State's Attorney's Office. Decatur Fire Department Battalion Chief Dan Klein told police that firefighters were dispatched to the fire at 8:15 p.m., according to the affidavit. While inside the trailer, Klein said, he saw the man trying to walk to a back bedroom, and he told the man he had to leave as there was an active fire scene. Klein told police the man began arguing with him and picked up a glass jar, cocking his arm back as if to throw it. Klein advised the man, then stated, "You have 5 seconds to get out of my house or I'm going to bash this over your head." The man did not carry out the threat, but several other firefighters heard him make it while standing about 2 feet away from Klein. Fire Inspector Mike Wigginton told police he later traced the origin of the fire to a burned notebook on a desk. Wigginton said it appeared the burning paper had been held against the power cord of a power strip under a desk in order to give the appearance of an electrical fire. The man remained in the Macon County Jail on Monday night in lieu of posting $75,000 bond. If he makes bail, he is ordered to stay away from Klein. Our next story is headlined, Welcome to our city. New entry signage, guide signs go up across Decatur. New signs directing people to area landmarks have popped up across Decatur. Once work is complete next week, there will be 36 placards across Decatur pointing visitors to places like Central Park and downtown, plus 4 new entryway signs at the eastern and western entrances to the city on US 36 El Dorado Street and the northern and southern entrances to the city on US 51. They're really nice signs and we're really excited about them, said Deputy City Manager Billy Tias. The signs are part of the Corridor Monument Installation Project, which officials hope will be a way to assist visitors in finding locations and make the entrances into the city more visually appealing. The state awarded grant money through the Illinois Transportation Enhancement Program several years ago to the city to address the condition of the main corridor entrances. Up until it received the green light to go forward last spring, the city had been in discussions with the state regarding design, engineering, and review to accommodate state-required changes. There was a lot of prep work to be done over the past several years, Tias said. The signs will be paid for through an 80-20 split grant, with the city covering a fifth of the construction and estimated engineering costs. The city's share was previously estimated to be $135,493, but Tias said Monday that the city's portion is now $85,256. That figure does not include work done prior to the installation of signs. The next story, police. Woman threatens to set man on fire. Police said a Decatur woman, angry her boyfriend was talking to other women on his phone, doused him with gasoline before flicking on a lighter and threatening to set him on fire. A police affidavit said the incident happened Saturday evening at the couple's shared home in the 2100 block of North Martin Luther King Jr. Drive. The 32-year-old woman is also accused of pouring bleach on the boyfriend, age 33, and hitting him with an umbrella, authorities said. She was arrested and booked on preliminary charges of domestic battery, along with theft and criminal damage. Preliminary charges are subject to a review by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. An affidavit from Decatur Police Officer C. Lane said the woman had stolen the boyfriend's 2 cell phones and told police she had later thrown them out of her car window. Lane said the boyfriend, who has lived with the woman for 8 months and is the father of her child, told police they had been arguing over the phones, which showed communications with other women. The boyfriend had demanded the phones back, and she had refused before dumping bags of his clothing outside and dousing them with gasoline. he advised. She then poured gasoline onto his shirt, the one he was wearing, removed a lighter from her pocket, lit it, and threatened to set him on fire. He stated he backed away, Lane said. She then removed a knife from her pocket and threatened to stab him with it. The woman is quoted as telling police she did douse the clothes bags with both gas and bleach, but said getting gasoline on the shirt the boyfriend was wearing was accidental. Next we have, arrest ends Dalton City standoff. An armed standoff with police in Dalton City ended at 11:05 a.m. Monday when a man gave himself up and was arrested. A Herald and Review editor at the scene saw the man being driven away in a Moultrie County Sheriff's Office squad car, and police said he was being taken to the Moultrie County Detention Center in Sullivan. The standoff began about 6 a.m. when police responded to reports that a man was in a woman's house on Illinois 128 and refusing to leave, the sheriff's office said. Officers said they heard sounds of a scuffle and then the woman fled outside, but she told them another man, believed to be her current boyfriend, was left inside with the man. That boyfriend was also released a short time later and told police he had been threatened with a gun. Police blocked off both ends of Dalton City and evacuated neighbors while Illinois State Police negotiators talked to the man. Moultrie County Sheriff Chris Sims said the situation began Sunday when deputies were called to the house and stood by while the man who later became involved in the standoff removed personal belongings from the woman's home. Sims said it was a former boyfriend-girlfriend situation and his officers were there to keep the peace. Sims said the property removal finished without incident, but the woman called his office around 6 a.m. Monday to report the former boyfriend was back in the house. Sims said she made comments leading police to believe the man was armed. He said officers arrived and heard the sound of a scuffle, and then the woman fled out the front door, telling them that two men were left inside the house. Sims called in an Illinois State Police emergency response team with negotiators, and the man was talking on the phone with them when he announced he was giving himself up. Moving inside the local news section, we have Woman Escapes Decatur Home Fire. A woman jumped out of her second-floor window to escape fire at her home on the corner of South Jasper Street and East Buena Vista Avenue, Battalion Chief Mike McGeon confirmed. McGeon said heavy smoke initially prevented them from entering the multi-story home. The woman resident was on the ground when they arrived around 10:15 a.m., he said. Firefighters located the fire on the first floor and extinguished it. The fire was controlled shortly before 1 p.m. Monday, according to a press release from the fire department. More than 20 firefighters assisted at the scene. The fire is still being investigated, but estimates suggest there was $35,000 in damage to the home and its contents, according to the release. Roads near the intersection are closed to traffic as fire and Ameren Illinois crews work in the area. Sarah Morgan Harris of Decatur said she was driving in the area and saw smoke coming out of the house. As she pulled over, she noticed a woman lying in the yard covered in soot. She called 911 at 10:10 a.m. The woman, who was coherent but appeared to be injured, told them that she had jumped out of the second floor window to escape the fire, Morgan Harris said. She was taken from the scene in an ambulance to Decatur Memorial Hospital. The woman was asleep before the fire and has no idea what happened, Morgan Harris said. Morgan Harris covered the woman with a drop cloth and waited with her for the ambulance to arrive. She was covered in soot and complaining of pain. The resident told Morgan Harris a dog was still in the house, but when Morgan Harris tried to enter the house to get the pet, it was too hot and there was too much smoke, she said. She was very, very scared, she said. My house burned down a few years ago, so I sympathize with this. It's very emotional. Our next story is headlined, Cape Air to Open Downtown Office. Cape Air officials said Monday that the airline on Wednesday will mark the opening of its new ticket office in downtown Decatur, 101 South Main Street, in Suite 101. Erin Hatzel, a spokeswoman for the Massachusetts-based airline, said the office will be open Tuesday through Friday and Sundays. There is one agent employed to work full-time at the office, she said, and its operating hours may vary depending on her schedule. Cape Air became Decatur Airport's commercial air service provider in February and offers multiple daily round-trip flights to O'Hare International in Chicago and Lambert International Airport in St. Louis. Since the airline put in its bid to become the city's commercial carrier in October, its management has noted intentions to open a ticket office in the city. Hatzel said that Cape Air has ticket offices across Illinois, Missouri, Kentucky, New York, Maine, Vermont, and Puerto Rico. The ticket office will also serve as a call center to receive overflow calls from Cape Air's reservation center at its Hyannis, Massachusetts reservation center. The city ticket offices provide a high visibility storefront for our customers who want to have a personal one-on-one interaction with a friendly reservation agent, she wrote in an email. Hatzell said Cape Air will post the office's hours of operation and any changes to them at capeair.com/aboutus/city-ticket-offices. Now we have some local briefs. The first is World War II bomber to visit Decatur. A restored World War II North American B-25 Mitchell bomber will visit Decatur as part of the Flying Legends of Victory tour Monday, June 25th through Sunday, July 1st at Gatros Aviation at Decatur Airport. The B-25 Made in the Shade will be in Decatur as part of a U.S. and Canadian tour sponsored by the nonprofit Arizona Commemorative Air Force Museum. The public will be able to explore the B-25, one of just 34 still flying. Tickets to see the plane are $10 per person or $20 for a family of four. Guest flights on the B-25 are available by reservation, with tickets at $325 for a waist gunner seat and $650 for a flight deck jump seat. Visiting times are 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. Monday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Guest flights will be scheduled Friday through Sunday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. For information or to book a flight, visit http://bit.ly/flovt-decatur-il. The next brief is Charleston man dies in crash. This is Dateline Cooks Mills. A Charleston man died from injuries he suffered when his motorcycle went off the road near Cooks Mills on Saturday. Joshua M. Capper, 41, lost control of his motorcycle at a curve just east of Cooks Mills just before 5 p.m. Saturday, a news release from the Coles County Sheriff's Office said. Capper was northbound on County Road 400 East and went off the road at the curve leading into County Road 1400 North, the Sheriff's Office said. The accident remains under investigation. Ameren donates 100 air conditioners. Ameren, Illinois, on Monday donated 100 air conditioners to the Decatur-Macon County Opportunities Corporation, several of which were given to the agency's clients during an event at its 1122 East Marietta Street office. Ameren employees loaded the Energy Star-rated air conditioning units into the vehicles of DMCOC clients that were scheduled to pick them up on Monday, according to a news release from Ameren. DMCOC will distribute the rest of the units to local families and individuals. Those who receive an air conditioner must meet the guidelines of the Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program. Veterans and people with disabilities are also eligible to receive an air conditioner. Ameren also provided home energy efficiency kits with LED light bulbs, two sink aerators, a smart power strip, and a low-flow shower head for each air conditioner that was donated. St. Teresa Mega Raffle Winners. Mike Wilson of Oakley is the grand prize winner of $100,000 in St. Teresa High School's annual Mega Raffle. The drawing was held on Friday, June 8th at Curly's Sports Bar and Pizza. Other winners were Philip Tapscott, Decatur, $10,000, Tom and Joe West of Decatur, $5,000, Joanne Ashcraft, Springfield, $1,000, Mary Miller of Decatur, $1,000, Doris Barnett of Decatur, $1,000, and Patrick Nolan of Decatur, also $1,000. Winners of $500 each are Willie Watley, Decatur, John McRae, Cerro Gordo, Eileen McQuality, Decatur, Pat Campbell, Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, Rachel Morrison of Clarendon Hills, and Jim Comerford of Forsyth. The $250 winners are Leslie Nicholson, Decatur, Kathy and Dan Sabak, Decatur, Mary Schultz of Decatur, LaCrone Family, Decatur, Betty and Porter, Decatur, Kathy Miller Group of Decatur, Dave and Elizabeth Weber, Decatur, Chad and Cheryl Burmeister, also Decatur, Tom Collier, David Doherty Osborne of Forsyth, Steve Funk and Linda Schulte, Decatur, and the Kunz Group of Forsyth. Crash slows traffic on US 36. Traffic on US 36 on Decatur's west side was delayed Monday as Decatur police responded to a crash near the intersection with North Sunnyside Road. Westbound lanes were closed as crews worked to remove a vehicle that rolled over on its side. The vehicle was removed and all lanes were open to traffic around 9:15 a.m. Police said they could not provide further information about the crash on Monday. Next, we'll take a brief look at the dialogue page. Here's the Our View editorial. It is headlined, Video Gambling Limits Apparently Not Yet Reached. Sin taxes are an easy victory for politicians. Taxes on tobacco and alcohol are an easier accomplishment because many of us are reluctant to publicly embrace our vices. That social shame helps our society decide to accommodate such punishments. Those sins are easy targets. Food and service taxes are even easier. At the points of purchase, we're complaining to employees who have nothing to do with the bottom lines of bills. Their job is to collect the money, not to listen to us gripe about additional reach into our pockets. By the time we're on the road from those exchanges, it rarely occurs to us to register our complaints with the lawmakers who make the decisions. We've yet to realize what kind of effects emerge in the potential aftermath of sports gambling in the state. Decatur has certainly drawn lines over video gaming, though. Councilmember David Horn had proposed increasing the video gaming terminal fee that the city collects from its current $250 per machine to $1,250 per machine, which would raise an additional $400,000 in revenue annually. There's been an explosion of gambling machines since the state first okayed the concept 6 years ago. In winter 2012, 25 Decatur businesses had 106 machines. By November 2016, the fee for the machines had increased from $20 to $250. The original proposal would have hiked the fee to $380, and the numbers had risen to 72 businesses and 338 machines. There are currently 86 businesses and 407 machines. Horn's proposal has been criticized by players and business owners who understandably feel targeted by the concept of additional charges. We expect those most affected by taxes to complain the loudest about them. Certainly, increasing a tax by 500% is going to be on the receiving end of a kickback against the idea by the taxed. The charge may be considered unfair to a small business owner, the very business owners who were supposed to be helped by a little additional income from the machines. But there are gaming parlors in Decatur that are not locally owned, and the money spent at those businesses is largely taken elsewhere. The current license price is $250, and that didn't stop 14 more businesses from opening their doors to 69 more machines in 18 months. Business Sense says if they're not that valuable, you don't pay it. Decatur has apparently not yet reached a breaking point to business owners with the per-machine charge because business owners keep paying it. Horn's proposal may be a bridge too far. Gaming parlor owners have previously warned that Decatur's greed with the licenses might lead to the city shooting itself in the financial foot. That's certainly worth considering. The increase would not raise an additional $400,000 annually if the fee is lower or if business owners decide not to renew some or all of their licenses. One thing is apparent, however. At $250 per machine annually, we have not yet reached the saturation point in the minds of owners of Decatur businesses that feature video gambling. Let's take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Tuesday, June 12th in just a few moments. Please stay tuned.